welcome to our Dive Deep interview.
So today we are talking with Jeff and Shanti Feldhahn, and they're coming to us from Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome, guys.
Yeah, welcome.
Hey, thanks. Great to be here.
It's always good to be with you guys. Even when we're not in the same place, which I always like being in the same place with you. But if we can't, this is good too.
It is. Yeah. It is. It's always good to hang with you. So yeah. Jeff and Shanti are the authors of over 20 or around 25 Bible studies and books. Mm-hmm. You've co-authored a few of those. Is that correct?
Yeah. She's the writer. She's roped me in on a few of them.
That's so kind of her.
Yeah.
I honestly, it's really funny. I mean, he always goes, oh, no. But I literally couldn't do it without him because he's like my translator. You know, I do all the social research and listen to what people are saying. And I'm like, I'm confused. What's this guy mean? And Jeff's like, okay, here's what that means. I'm like, okay. I literally couldn't do this.
Yeah.
I love that. I love how God uses both of your strengths in that way. And you know, that's kind of the way, it's so interesting when Mark and I, we've only written two books together. And the first book that we wrote was disastrous.
Right.
Absolutely disastrous.
A little challenging.
It was. Yeah. Because we didn't understand the concept of mind styles. I don't know if you've ever done anything with mind styles, but
we haven't done it for ourselves, but I know some of the concepts. Yeah.
Okay.
And so what we learned is that I am a sequential and he is random. Mm-hmm. And so we were trying to write a book in a sequential way. And finally, with our No More Perfect Marriages, we played into his randomness. We would, you know, we would work on a chapter together and it was all right, this chapter's on grace. Mark, I want you to think of anything about grace, any story, any scripture.
So I would just be
downloading.
Dumped. Yeah, just dumping it down.
And then I took his information and I made it sequential and added my own in there. It was like, we did it.
Yeah, exactly. Great process.
Awesome.
It's awesome. I think we're both probably sequential.
We're more sequential.
Both of us, yeah.
Both of you.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
At least in that area.
Yeah.
Yeah. What areas are you not sequential in?
I am definitely, and this is one of those male-female differences that doesn't apply to everybody, but one of the things we found in our research that is definitely us is that I have to process out loud, like circles. I have to think things through by talking them through.
That's me.
Classic female. Really interesting.
It is.
Yeah.
I've got that classic, you know, verbal processor brain.
Yeah.
And Jeff is like, just let me go down deep and think.
Yeah, and the real challenging part is, and what she's learned with me, when she is verbally processing, she actually has to tell me that's what she's doing.
So I know. That's what we've learned.
Since words, for me, when I speak them, it's usually I've processed them already, and this is my kind of decision. And this is where I come down on it. And so when I hear her speak words, I'm assuming she's at the same point. So she'll have to tell me, wait, I'm just thinking out loud right now. So don't take this as the end of where I'm going to get to. So,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Very common. This is not just us. This is in our research.
This is
not.
Very common. 24 years and she's still having to translate for me what she's doing.
Oh yeah,
I know.
Yeah. That's, we do that.
We did not understand that either. In fact, in our No More Perfect Marriages book, we do what we call your personal operating inventory, and it's just some of those personality temperament things that aren't talked about a lot. And one of them is, are you an internal processor or an external processor?
Right.
Because it was causing conflict for us.
Yeah.
And when I can remember the first time that I saw it was we were needing to buy a car. And so Mark announces on Wednesday that we're going to buy a Ford. You know, he's sure that we're going to buy a Ford and that's the direction we're going in. And on Thursday, it's a Honda.
Yeah.
And on Friday, he's
thinking things through while he's
somewhere else. And I'm thinking,
not just me.
would you like make up your mind?
Yeah.
And what I didn't realize is, see, I, for the same reason, Jeff, I would have thought all that out and done all the research before I ever said anything. I thought he was doing that, and he wasn't. He was processing. So that was the first time that we were like,
right.
Oh, that's a big difference.
Yeah. And so I have to continually say to Jill, hey, I'm just
thinking aloud.
I'm thinking this out loud, and then we'll come to a decision. But anyway, it's very different.
And it helps. I mean, that has helped me tremendously. That yeah, Shanti no, gives me it, that heads
it,
up.
It really, I think yeah. it really has made a big difference.
Because honestly, my position on this is when she would say something, like this is the beginning of her kind of processing, I'd go, fine then, we'll do it your way.
Ah.
Wait, just, no, there is no my way yet.
Right.
We're only starting.
Anyway. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. Now, I don't know about you, Jeff, but I'll tell on myself. As the internal processor, so what we like to say is Mark talks about it, and talks about it some more, and then I think about it some more, and then I tell him what we've decided.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot.
But what I've realized is I have really had to adjust and right. let him know, like, hey, just so you know, I've been thinking about X.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, that's great.
You know, he needs to know, because by the time I tell him something, I've been thinking about it for 2 weeks, and he's like, just, you know, right. didn't even have any idea I was thinking about it.
Right.
So I've learned that I've had to speak up a little more and let him into my brain a little more, yeah. let him know what's going on. And then he's had to learn to let me know that he's just processing aloud. So right. yep, definitely places that we can learn from each other.
Yep. So what are some other differences that you guys are aware of?
Yeah.
Oh, golly. How long of a time do we have?
We're all day here.
We could always do a part two or three.
Well, here's actually something that we've laughed about. I mean, and it is kind of laughing about. Shanti's an optimizer, and I am a taking things off the plate kind of person. So, for example,
define optimizer.
Optimizer right. is if there is X minutes that we've got that we're going to be doing and we're going to start something.
Like we're going to go run errands.
Right.
Yeah.
She okay. will use all of those, that gap time to, she'll fill it in with something else to try to get things done as quickly or efficiently as possible.
Like if we're going to be in the car anyway, I mean, we might as well try to, I mean, I have a Costco list, right? I mean, it's not just going on this errand and this, I mean, we might as well go to Costco at the same time.
Right. Gotcha. And it doesn't matter that.
That's very efficient.
And it doesn't matter if that side trip doesn't take only the 10 minutes that she's allotted and it takes 15 minutes or 20 minutes, which then make us, you know, difficult right. to make the other one stress. I am all about removing stress and opportunities for stress in my life. As we like to say, is I like to spend my time thinking about puppies and rose petals or nothing, just something.
Rainbows and unicorns.
Just nothing. And that's what I am working toward. She's working toward
efficiency.
Filling in and getting things
efficiency.
Accomplished. And,
absolutely.
And, yes.
Like, I mean,
yeah. That's so funny, you guys.
It does. And so yeah, right. I would say that she's the person in the checkout line who notices all the other checkout lines that she could have been in and how fast all those other ones.
Oh, that's Jill.
It's so
oh
mean.
My gosh.
She is kind of like, okay, maybe I'm competitive, so I like to be in the fastest line. But for the most part, I've got nothing to do, so I might as well just shut my brain off and just kind of relax for these next 5 minutes.
And people like Shanti and I don't understand what it means to shut your brain off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That doesn't
it's so
work.
Sad.
It's a great place to be.
Well, okay. In all seriousness, this is like, cause I don't know how much you want us to get into the research. That
go for it. Yes, please. Let's go for it.
The thing that this is different is the open windows.
Yeah.
Like in all seriousness, one of the things we found in the research with men and women, and again, there's some people who are flipped, like, you know, like you guys are flipped on the internal versus external.
Right. Part. Yeah. Right.
But I mean, the thing is that most of the time, the male brain is like sort of a computer desktop with one window open at a time.
Yes.
And whatever they're thinking about, they think on it, they work on it, whatever their thing is, and then they click the X and it goes away.
Yes. And may not open another window.
Right.
We may just kind of sit there.
Yes. Just
sitting in the checkout line for 5 minutes with no window open. See, Jill and I, you guys are mutants. Like, we have no idea what you're talking about, because for us, we have 10 windows open. We're bouncing back and forth. And if that one worry, that other thing pops up on our brain and we click the X, it won't go away. Like, it keeps popping back up.
And yeah, so that's a great picture. Yeah.
Line, you know, sitting here thinking about, well, but I this extra 5 minutes means, you know, and there's a whole domino effect.
But you never get to the place where you've closed all the windows.
No.
So
it drives me nuts.
I know. So why try? Why not just go, okay, this is just the way it is, and I'm not going to worry about all those things undone.
Because we don't have a neural rest state. See, okay, so this is something.
There you go. Explain that one.
Right. Yeah.
So it turns out, so Jeff would always, this was always our thing, where I would ask him this question, we'd be driving in the car or something, and I'd be like, what are you thinking? Nothing. And I honestly was thinking he was like thinking about something he didn't want to share.
Right. Know?
He would never really let me in to that part of his life. So it turns out he actually was thinking nothing, which I can't fathom as a female brain. But according to, there was a group of neuroscientists, I think these were this group of Israeli neuroscientists a few years ago, that discovered there's a state of being in the male brain that doesn't exist in the female brain. I mean, in most cases, right? There's always exceptions.
Right.
But it's called the neural rest state. And it's like literally the computer with the screensaver. Like, wow. The screensaver is up, but there's no processing going on. The computer's on.
Yes. Right.
But it's literally like thinking nothing. And that's can't even.
Yeah, it's magnificent.
No. So, I mean.
So jealous.
It's a perfect, I mean, we can't understand that because we don't have it.
No,
right.
We don't.
So we just can't even understand that. And here's what I love about this, you guys, and I love that we just were able to jump right in. I mean, here we've been married. You guys have been married, what, 24 years?
Years.
Okay. We've been married 35 years.
Yep.
And we still are constantly bumping into these differences.
Absolutely.
They just never go away.
And at some level, I think it's because I hear it, but I can't believe it.
Oh,
you can't really be like that.
Right.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
But we will never be able to understand that, because the others just literally function in a different way.
Right.
And that's
the way we're designed.
So then the question happens is, what do you do with that?
Right.
To stay in a loving, like, we, you know, we've been bantering back and forth and we've been having fun with the male female thing and the differences and all of that. But literally these things start to divide couples.
Yeah.
Because of where mentally they start going, like thinking that because their spouse is different, their spouse is wrong. So that's one way.
We're not compatible.
Right. So here's my question. What do you guys do to stay in a good place that you can recognize these differences? You might even banter and hassle each other about them on occasion, but you know that you're still respectful, you're still loving to each other. How do you keep that from drawing you apart?
Yeah, that's great. First off, and I think it was the research for us, that I had to actually understand that it wasn't willful on the part of Shanti, that it wasn't intentional. It wasn't her. And once you can kind of get to that point,
right?
Kind of like, oh, okay. I mean, I might laugh and say that I don't believe it. I accept it, that she really is like this, and which is considerably different than me, but it's not willful.
I'm not doing it to drive you nuts.
You're not. And I'm not trying, at least not most of the time, doing it to drive you nuts. And it is kind of what you've said in the Happiest Couples book. It's believing the best.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's always going to, always, right? There's always going to be points where it's just like that automatic kind of subconscious feeling like he doesn't care, right? Like he is just doing that to drive me nuts, or he knew how that would make me feel, or whatever. And to be willing to say, no, actually, no, I know he cares about me.
Yeah.
So therefore, he doesn't realize how that makes me feel. He doesn't realize that this really hurts my feelings. He doesn't realize that this drives me nuts. He doesn't realize that. And so really, it's a matter, like with this thing about the, in all seriousness, the brain, you know, these different sort of types of brain wiring, and, you know, me having all these open windows open. And the thing for us that used to drive me really bananas and made me feel bad, and he had no idea, was he would I'd come to him with some big issue, like something that was really like on my heart and it was bugging me, like something with the kids, and I'd come back to it multiple times, and he'd say, honey, just don't think about it. You know, just don't let that bother you. I'm like, what do you mean don't let that bother me? Like, it bothers me. What do you mean don't let it? And what we didn't realize, you know, I'm thinking he just doesn't care. He's insensitive, right? To my, how I'm feeling. Actually, no. What he was thinking in his male brain was, he was just saying, oh, it's bothering you, so click the X on the window so it'll go away. Like, he thought,
which he literally can do.
Guys can do that. And so, you know, what he was saying is, you know, don't, like, take that thought and close it for a while because it's hurting you. So he was being sweet. And I was thinking, you don't care. And so now that I know this, and now that he knows this, he's learned that he has to, you know, that women can't just click the X and make the worry go away.
Right.
It's an action. And so he's learned instead to say, you know, essentially, is this an open window? Like, is this going to keep bothering you? And if so, is there something that would make you feel better? Rather than making me feel stupid for, you know, maybe needing to call the kid's teacher or whatever it is that's going on, he can actually encourage that rather than me feeling like he thinks I'm silly for.
Yeah. And I think for what it ultimately comes down to is, we have, each of us have a choice of whether we're going to walk in grace toward the way that someone is or not. A little example that Shanti often shares is my roommate from law school. He was my roommate in New York. He's an African American, and he was a Princeton undergrad, Harvard Law School. And so we all hung out together in New York, and there were some times when Shanti and he would come and join me for dinner if I was working late up at my law firm or something like that. And so they would go out in middle of Manhattan, and she remembers saying to him, why don't you just grab the cab? And he says, no. She goes, oh, just go ahead. And he'd go out there, put his arm up, and the cabs would shoot by, and he came back and said, why don't you go do it?
What? Like, it was just occurring to me what was going on. Like, we've been friends for years and years and years. And the first time this happened, I was just like, are you kidding me? And I was so mad. And I walked out and I put my arm up and I had three cabs fighting. And I was like, how do you deal with this every day?
How do you live with
it? Wow, suddenly you saw racism.
Oh, absolutely. My gosh. Like, I honestly was like the ignorant white person who thought, it's not that big a deal anymore. And here I see right in front of me, this is our friend's reality every day. He's wearing a suit. And like, so he's an investment banker.
And she said, how do you deal with this every day? And what did he say?
He said, either you let it drive you crazy, or you just have to have a permanent mindset of grace.
Mm.
And it's the same thing with marriage. Either you let it drive you crazy or you have a permanent mindset of grace.
Oh, I love that, you guys. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
And you know, that's in our book, No More Perfect Marriages, we talk about the 8 God tools. And one of them is forgiveness and one of them is grace. And what we tell people is, how do you tell the difference between which God tool you need to use? Is it grace or is it forgiveness? And what we say is, if that thing hurt you that your spouse did, you probably need to use your God tool of forgiveness. If that thing that your spouse did irritated you, you probably need to use your God tool of grace.
That's really good.
I like that.
I really like that a lot.
Yeah. And it's the same. It's the same as what you're saying. You've got to have that mindset of grace. And I think more marriages would be saved if they would just move to a mindset of grace.
Yeah. That permanent grace. I like that. Yeah.
Well, it's the thing that we have found in all seriousness is the vast majority of people really care about each other. Mm-hmm. Even in difficult marriages, by the way. And it's, I mean, like really, truly the number overall, it was like 99.37 something, something percent. Like we care about each other. I think it was 97 something percent, even in really struggling marriages. So the key is believing that that is true, right? Like that this is actually accurate. And then the next step is, so this person cares about me. So this difference, I may be different than you, but it's legitimate. It's not an illegitimate thing. You're just wired differently. And so it's now me going, okay, it may drive me crazy or it just may be a little frustrating, but this is truly how you're wired. And so if I want to have a good, peaceful, enjoyable relationship and want to make you feel cared for, either I apply this stuff and know this stuff and try to be aware of this stuff that I just didn't know before and have this permanent attitude of grace, or I'm going to constantly let it be bothering me wish that it was different and wish that God had wired you differently. And that's like a Dr. Phil kind of comment. Like, you don't have to deal with it, but how's that working for you?
You know, no kidding.
The opposite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I love this conversation about grace. Let's add the whole kindness factor that you wrote about and challenged individuals to. How do those cooperate with each other?
Mm-hmm. Good question.
You want me to tackle that? Well, it's interesting. What we found, I went back and looked at all the studies that we had done over the years, and we're now in the middle of our 9th nationally representative study.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, we've been doing this for about 16 years now. Wow, 16 years, that's crazy.
Wow.
And when you look at all the studies, there's a thread that runs through all of them. And because, you know, what we're most trying to do is to help people thrive. It's like to do the little things that are going to help people thrive. And what the thread was, is that what we found is that whether you're thriving in your relationship and really in your life, it's far more correlated to how you're treating other people than how you are being treated.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's so countercultural, because in your marriage or at work or whatever, it's all about, but I need to be treated right. You're not treating me fairly. You're not meeting my needs. You're not what, I mean, that's where our brains naturally go. And it turns out, yeah, it's not like it's bad to have somebody meet your needs, but that if you want to thrive, be far more focused on how you're treating your spouse and than how they're treating you. And so it's basically about being kind. I mean, that's really bottom line. That's what it is. It's all about whether you're being kind to them. And so we started to look at, what does that mean? Like, what,
right?
What does that look like? Because pretty much 100% of us think we already are kind.
And so,
you know, people hear this and they're like, oh man, I wish John was listening. You know, like, we think we're kind. It's a high value for us, but these other people need to work on it. And I realized as we started doing this research, honestly, we're really deluded. We have no idea that we're not as kind as we think we are. And there's essentially all this stuff that we need to have our eyes opened to about the ways that we're really being unkind. We're hurting the other person's feelings. We're really kind of getting on them without intending to. We're not having grace. We're blind to it. And so really having our eyes opened to that and what can we do instead is this huge, pretty simple, but huge relationship changer.
Right. And so in your book, you talk about many of those things and your book is called The Kindness Challenge. Yep. And so can you just share one very practical kindness element that we can do in our marriages?
Yeah, I can tell you right now, honestly, the best thing for, and this is quantitatively, we've actually quantified this, is to do what's called the 30-day kindness challenge.
Okay.
Try this. It's literally doing three really simple things every day for 30 days. It's for your spouse, for your husband, for your wife. First is don't say anything negative about them for 30 days. And that's either negative to them or about them to somebody else.
Ah, okay.
Because I can be polite to Jeff if we're in a rough season, but if I'm going to my friends and I'm like, ugh, you would not believe what he did. I don't realize it, but I'm actually sabotaging how I feel about him.
Okay.
So that's the first thing, nothing negative. Second, every day for 30 days, find one thing you can sincerely praise about them, sincerely affirm, and you tell them and you tell somebody else. So I'm telling my girlfriends, I can't tell them what I was annoyed about, but I say, you know, he did this amazing thing with the kids and I tell him, thank you. And then I go and I tell my girlfriends, guess what he did yesterday? And it's like Philippians 4:8, right? I'm thinking on whatever is excellent and lovely and worthy of praise rather than what's worthy of driving me crazy. So, and then third every day for 30 days is to do a small action of kindness or generosity, some little thing like literally notice that he's been working late. And so I'm getting up a little bit early to make him coffee in the morning. Like he usually makes me coffee. You know what? I'm super tired, but I'm going to run downstairs and I'm going to get the coffee started. It's like, that's like a little thing, but it says, I notice what's going on in your life. I notice.
I'm thinking about you.
That's, I mean, there's all sorts of different kinds of generosity. There's multiple things that you can do. Maybe it's literally like, maybe it's a husband listening to this and his wife just, when she comes home from work, she just needs to unload some of that. And you listen for like 10 minutes. That's an action of generosity.
Right.
And listen and don't try to fix.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Like and that would be a huge action of generosity.
Exactly. What we found is if you do these three little things for 30 days, 89% of relationships improved.
That is huge.
Huge. Yeah.
Yeah. It is definitely well worth doing. Wow. That is powerful. Well, think about, you've got a new book that just came out, Shanti, and it was a devotional.
Yes, my first devotional.
Rest in peace.
Can I show you how pretty the cover looks?
Yes, of course.
Like,
of
course. I've never had anything like this. Like all my books are these like,
so pretty.
Like all my books are normally these like, you know, nonfiction. Like that's the kindness challenge, which you're just talking about. I just love all the flowers. I get to be girly for a minute.
Yes. And this was not, so for our listeners and those that are viewing, obviously Jeff and Shanti write many of their books out of their research. They research, they pull all those facts together. They figure out what the facts tell us. And then they educate us so that we can better understand each other and we can improve and thrive in our relationships. But this book did not come out of research. It was more of a personal book. So tell us a little bit about that what did it teach you? Because I know as an author, every book I write teaches me something. So
this was really interesting because it's called Find Rest.
Okay. Says the woman who can't
Jill, you both get this, right?
I got it, girl.
Yes. And here's the thing that was so amazing as I started realizing, because I needed this really badly. I mean, you know what? We were talking about this recently, Jill, when I saw you here in Atlanta. And it's just like, you know, sometimes your hair is just on fire. And there's this, there's amazing verse in the Bible where Jesus says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened. I'll raise my hand and I will give you rest. And I thought, this is a promise. Like, there's got to be a way to do this. What does it look like? And so there was actually, in all seriousness, there was a little bit of research, because it was like looking at what science says and what scripture says about what are the main causes of stress for women. What are the main solutions? And looking at this as a devotional, a little bit of water every day, kind of.
Yes, yes.
And one of the things, in all seriousness, that to me was so helpful and so encouraging as I was putting this together for me, is I was so struck by the fact that when Jesus promises that I will give you rest, his solution is not what you and I, Jill, have probably been told. Because I don't know how many times I've heard somebody say, oh, girl, you just need to slow down. And listen, that may actually be true.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it's never felt like an encouraging solution to me. Because I can slow down for a short time, but a slow life does not seem like a solution for a lifetime to me. Because mm-hmm. we're just busy. Like, we're busy people. We've got kids, like, you know, when you've got teenagers running around and you're constantly driving carpool, I mean, it's, we're just busy. And so, but I look at what Jesus said there when he says, I will give you rest. And the next verse is this mind change where he says, take my yoke upon you and mm-hmm. learn from me, for I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. And the analogy, the word picture that he's giving us is not what we've been told. He's not a yoke is a tool or an implement to help
a
burden beast work well. Like you're out in the field in the heat of the day, plow in the field. It's not, here, let me take the yoke off your shoulders and send you back to the barn to find rest. That's not what it is. It's, you can be working, but you don't have to be stressed. You can be in the middle of your normal, busy life.
Okay.
And you can have rest for your souls. That was such a huge promise. So basically, that's what the devotional was focusing on.
I love that. And so let's tie that into marriage.
Yeah.
So when our souls are at rest, even in the midst of our busy life, how does that affect our relationships? How does that affect this relationship? Because I think we've got to connect the dots to that, because it does.
Yeah.
When we're either in chaos, when our soul is in chaos or our soul is at rest, how does that affect our marriage?
Do you see the impact of that, Jeff?
Sure. I mean, for many of the guys, when we talk with them, they're thinking that the information that we share in either the books or in the conferences, that this seems like a whole lot of work, and it doesn't seem like it's going to lead to rest. But every single person that we know, we see, we talk with, wants peace, wants rest.
Mm-hmm.
And if the method to it is in the marriage by learning, just like that scriptural verse there in Matthew that Shanti was sharing about learning of him, and we'll find rest for our souls. For me, you know, if that works, I'm awesome. All in. Yeah. I'm all in. And because I want peace. I do want rest. I think I know how to get there, but if it's counter to what scripture says how to get there, I want the right way to get there. So
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I can totally see that. And I mean, I can think of seasons in our life where my soul wasn't at rest, and then, and it affected us.
Yeah.
And yours wasn't at rest, and it affected us. So we're not isolated. Whatever's going on with us affects the other. So I think we do have to, you know, we kind of say, when I'm a better me, we're a better we.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. I like that. We it's all about oneness, right? If we're really one, then it's going to be like that. And frankly, just also from a self-interest standpoint, I mean, most women listening to this get this, that if there's something at odds here, it's going to create a lack of rest. It's going to create a lack of peace. I mean, when there's something wrong and something off, I mean, it's like nothing else is right with the world until this is resolved. Yes.
Right. Oh, so true. Yeah.
That is so very true.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys, this has been good. Such good conversation.
We loved being with you.
Yes. Now we have one more question for you. I try to ask this at the end of all of our interviews. And that is, you know, we call this No More Perfect Date Night. Do you have a favorite date night activity that you enjoy doing? Or maybe it's a date day. Do you have something that you really enjoy doing together?
Okay, you're gonna laugh, but our favorite date night usually, you're gonna think this is horrible.
No, go for it.
I'm completely serious. I don't know what you would say, but because we're gone quite a bit on weekends and we do a lot of marriage conferences and we have kids, like, so honestly, when we're at home, what would otherwise be a date night is us and the kids sitting on the couch watching a movie together. It's not
truly
us.
Is.
It's not us being out at dinner. Partly because, I guess, in all seriousness, because we are out as a couple sometimes in other cities without them. And so,
yeah, you're a little backwards.
Yeah. We are.
I mean, we're the same way, you know, because I mean, we're gone in the fall and the spring, sometimes every weekend for 7 or 8 weeks.
Right.
And it's just the two of us. Yeah. So we're getting time. Now we're working, but we do have time for relaxed conversations and we're in a hotel and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I get that. You kind of flip that around.
Yeah.
Jeff, what about you? What would you say?
That one is absolutely it. But for the other part is I'm a morning person. So that time on the couch is really great for like the first 30 to 35 minutes. And then I fall asleep. And Shanti's, her circadian rhythm or whatever you want to say is a little opposite. So she's able to stay up late, and getting up early in the morning is a little more challenging.
Yes.
However, I can get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and I love that time. And I love the morning. So that's my time. So instead, what she's done is she forces herself to get up early.
On occasion.
Pretty regularly.
Almost every
day. Really? Because we have to get up at 6 anyway because of the kids getting off to school.
So we sit at the kitchen table and drink coffee and read the news or whatever. But to
that's
us,
kind of our date night.
It sounds funny.
Reverse.
But I mean, it's simple.
Right. It works. Yeah.
And you know what? I love that because it does. What you've illustrated with both of those is you have to find what works for you.
Right.
You have to find what works for, you know, the time that you have, the season of life that you're in, all of that plays into it. So I love that.
Right.
I love that they're non-traditional.
Yeah. Well, and it really, what it is just, I want her presence around. Mm-hmm. And I kind of was thinking of this just the other day as I was watching in a cafe, watching a bunch of high school kids with their phones and not talking to each other. And I've always kind of rolled my eyes at that, saying, can you believe what the electronics are doing? But, you know, for the truth of it, when I was with my friends, we weren't talking all the time. But we were just around
one
another.
Well,
and sometimes not even that. Yeah. Sometimes we were watching TV together, not saying a word for 2 hours. And that was good, but it was just their presence.
Yeah.
And
you know, that's what I love. You know, I just love knowing that she's right there.
Right.
I love that.
That's cool.
That is good.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys, thank you so much.
Yeah, this has been great.
It's
thank you.
It's been fun to chat with you.
Yeah.
And this is Mark and Jill Savage, and we are signing off with a reminder that a real marriage is not perfect, but a real marriage is two people being perfected. Thanks for joining us.
Yep.